Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. This is your host, Adam Lowry, on a beautiful, beautiful, hot as shit Saturday afternoon. Damn, I opened that shit like a radio, dude. That was fucked up. Hope you're taking care of you, though. Hope you're living your Cognitive Rampage. This has been a hell of a week for myself on the Cognitive Rampage. I have knocked out some, five podcasts in, 6 days, something like that. We've been piling them up. So the first 2 weeks of October are going to be launching a lot of podcasts like crazy. So now I usually let the guests do their intro like I'm going to, but A.B. LaRoche, I found through on accident, when Danny Page was on the podcast. If you look back at TCR number 91, that was Danny Page. He told one hell of a story. A lot of you sent us some emails and, you know, said thanks for that story, et cetera. So in my investigation of Danny, I came across a video, and it was a video of this wild woman who I just had.
That's a good analogy.
I remember smirking, going, "What the fuck?" And then I saw kind of the energy to which Danny was putting forth, and so was she, and that she was A.B. LaRoche that's on the show now. And there's so much more as I started following that story, contacted her, reached out, learned more. And I had to have her on the podcast so you could, so you could hear the story. So anyway, man, I'm rambling, AB. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on. Tell them.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's all you. It's all you. You're on the
mic. It's all me.
Screen. Yeah.
All right. Well, start.
Well, I mean, look, there's so much. We talked for a little while, and we both know that we could probably chat for hours about anything in life, right? We've both seen a lot of trauma. I think we share that. But, you know, for me, it was more or less, instead of having one of those, you know, TCR rampages where we're just chatting about all the things in life, which we'll probably end up doing after this show, I'm sure, eventually, yeah, on another time or another show. So I wanted you to tell your story, basically, because and walk us all the way through. I'm talking about the beginning of the trials, man, but I want to go all the way, all the way to that video that I called you on when I said I really thought you were going to call it quits on that corporate video. So walk me through that struggle.
It's a long story, so I don't know if you guys are ready for it, but I'll
look, people, listen, we watch for the stories, man. And for me, I've invited some people on before too. They're like, look, man, I'm nobody famous, et cetera. And I'm like, look, that's not what this is about. You know, for me, you know, it got paid forward to me once, but they're stories. And I think people's life stories need to be told. And in some of these podcasts, that's what I try to set out to do. Not all of them. Sometimes, you know, I set out to learn and interview, if you will. But, you know, for this one, it's one of those to where it's that story that needs to be told. It's an empowering story. I know there's other women out there that have gone through what you've gone through that need to hear it, et cetera. So, I mean, this really is your platform here, AB. You know, anytime I do a long intro, it's going to be me shutting up most of the show.
You know? Okay, cool. Do you want me to just get down dirty?
No, tell the story. Just however
you... Okay. So, I was raised in Warcourt Island. I have two blood brothers. My mother and father, I got divorced when I was very young. At the age of 4 years old, I was molested by a neighbor across the street from my house. He was a little bit younger than my older brother. And from 4 to 12 years old, it happened on several occasions. And there's a video that I posted on Facebook because it has gotten to several huge events in my life where I've come to a point where I have to voice this. This is something that I've had to deal with, and it's just kind of snowballed with all of the other encyclopedias that were on top of it. And in order for me to come out from underneath all of that, I have to start with the first volume, which was my molestation. And, you know, the video actually has my mother talking about what happened in the incident when the first time it happened and how I changed. And if you see in that video, you can see pictures of me when I was a younger little girl to when I started getting older. And I actually, until I did that video, I didn't even notice myself that I'm looking at these pictures of this funny, innocent, like light in her eyes, little girl. And then all of a sudden by 13, 14, 15, I was so serious and I was miserable and I was upset and I just,
you were hurt.
I was just wiling out. And, you know, my mother was a single mom at the time, making ends meet. my father had a drinking problem at the time. And, you know, when with that said, you know, with alcohol, there's verbal and sometimes physical abuse. And, you know, me and my brothers were just barely trying to keep our heads above water. We were on welfare. My grandmother, thank God for her, she stepped in as the second parent and actually pretty much raised me while my mother took care of my brothers. So I would always run to my grandmother's house because, you know, when you're in a home, your home is supposed to be that safe place to fall. Well, I didn't have that. Like I said, from the age of four, my home was not safe for me.
It was the bad place to be, anywhere but
exactly,
home.
Exactly. So I would go to my grandmother's, and then right outside my door was the gentleman who molested me. So it was just a constant reminder all the time of this environment that it was like I couldn't get out. So when I would go to my grandmother's house, which was only 10 minutes away, it was like my safe haven. And when I was there, you know, I found out growing up, my mother was upset. You know, she was like, I don't understand why you wanted to go there. And I think after we've kind of sat down and had that video and I kind of interviewed her about my molestation.
Did your parents know, or did you keep it a secret from everyone?
So what happened at 4 years old, thank you for asking that. So when I was four, it happened, you know, my father had us on weekends and, you know, that whole starting of parenting when you get divorced, you know, you go to your parents in the week, you go to your dad's on the weekends, you're with your mom during the week. So my father was picking us up that weekend on Friday night, and I got molested. I think it was a Thursday or Friday. Like I said, we don't really remember the days. And my mother said to me, you know, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So before my father picked me up, either Friday or Saturday morning, it just was like hectic, you know, it happened. I had school and I came home, and then it was like, okay, you got to get packed up for your father's house. And then, you know, your dad picks you up and then you're gone for the weekend. So it was like a wham for me. It just like got molested. My father picks me up. I'm gone for the weekend. And then Sunday comes and my mom, we get dropped off. So it wasn't, at the time, you know, it was, there was no time to even, you know, I'm 4 years old. How can you correlate with all of that?
You're still trying to process it if it's okay. And if the piece of shit did it, like most of these predators
exactly.
do it, they make it sound like it's some natural thing or it's your fault or something like that.
Exactly. So by the time I got home, my mother said I was clingy. I was withdrawn. She said, you know, when I was little, I was very independent and very like happy and dancing and singing. And she said I was very withdrawn and I was clinging to her. And my mother's a nurse. So she has worked with children and she's gone through all of those programs where you identify if a child's been molested and everything else. So my mother was like, something's not right. And I remember because, and this is very important, what I want to share with all the listeners, and that the final video, the atonement video that I'm going to be putting out to finish the video of my molestation, I'm going to be talking about, it's the way you discuss the topic with your children. I want to take a minute for everybody to understand that. It is the way you say it to your child will reflect on how they will confide in you. Growing up in a Portuguese family, and we're very like loud in your face and everything else. And, you know, it was like, I know that my parents and my family said it in a stern way, but they said it in a way from as a child. I mean, I vividly remember this. It was like, if somebody touches you, you tell me. Well, that energy of aggression is like, if somebody touches you, you're going to get in trouble. You're going to get taken away. And that's it.
Okay. So it makes it sound like, yeah, tell me so I know that you know, what you did was wrong. Yeah. The way it comes
exactly.
across is very, oh man. Yeah. Well,
so that's growing up.
Relate that to how you may talk to a teenage daughter even, right? Or mm-hmm. a son where you're like, look, if you have sex, you need to come to me and you need to tell me right away. You know, very like, oh shit,
yeah.
I can't say anything. Yeah. That's
exactly. And I was like, no, no. Like I was little. I was like, no, no, no. And my mother actually, you know, this was a huge healing thing for me and my mother that we just did a few months ago. And, you know, she's still going through some processing of it, and so am I, but it's getting better as we talk about it. But she actually said in my interview that will be out that she thought it was my father. Because if you think about it, I went to my father's and I came home on Sunday.
Yeah.
So she thought it was my father. And I said, no. Like when she had asked me when I was little, I said, no, no, no. Ooh. So a couple weeks later, she brought me to a therapist to see what was going on. And of course, I remember like the puppets.
So you did tell her then?
Well, not exactly. So what happened was she had brought me to this office and this woman had brought out these weird puppets. Like I actually vividly remember these puppets. They were very weird.
Yeah,
there's a lot going on.
Trippy, yes. And psychology.
The whole thing was just very confusing as a small child because I'm thinking I'm in trouble. So, you know, she's asking me questions and then she asked me if it was my father and I said no, and it wasn't. And then she said, you know, did someone touch you? Now I'm terrified. You know, I'm terrified at this point because I'm like, I'm going to get taken away. I'm never going to see my parents again.
That was your thought.
So I said, no, it wasn't my dad, which it wasn't, but I didn't say who it was.
It sounds like the piece of shit perpetrator curved it on you that you would be in trouble.
Exactly.
Found out.
And that's how it all starts.
What a piece of shit. So he gets, oh God.
So through the years, it happened several times. Now, I'm sure you remember, Adam, when we were kids, you would come home, drop your bags off, go outside. And when the light street light comes on or your mother yells, you come home. So you were out. We were doing manhunt and building forts. And I mean, we had several forts in the woods. And I mean, we were just like running amok all yeah. over the neighborhood. Yeah. And the neighborhood I was brought up, like where I grew up in was our houses were small Cape Cods. We lived across the street from TF Green Airport. Behind a row of houses was the train tracks. Like, and there was drugs and alcohol and gangs.
Your accent came in. You know,
yeah. It does. It does. I'm sorry.
The closer you get to home, even when we started, the closer we get to home, you notice everything begins to change in our behavior. Sorry, yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, it's okay. Because like we had talked about before we got on, I wasn't living in the hood, but it could have been the hood. Yeah. Not in the hood in the sense of it.
The point, it doesn't have, you don't have access. It's not like it's a comfortable place.
No, I mean, I lived in an environment where everybody tried to rip each other down so that no one succeeded. Mm. It was and I wrote it in one of my posts. It was one of the street smarts that I had to learn and the survival of the fittest, because I could have gotten pregnant, gone down, taken drugs. I could have been an alcoholic, but I didn't. I made sure that I knew those were things were bad, but at the same time, people just try to kept clawing me back as every time I kept trying to get another step out. So make a long story short, I never told anybody until I was 19 years old when I had my first real boyfriend and I came out to my family. And by then it was too late.
Oh, so and your mom thought it was your dad later in life. When you were older?
No, she knew it wasn't my dad, but she knew it was somebody.
Well, but what did she think? So she knew then that you had been molested. You told her in some kind of way.
Yeah, so I think what happened was, now remember, my mother's a single mother. I don't want the listeners to be like, well, shame on your mother. She didn't do what she should have.
No, not trying to.
Oh, no, not at all. I'm just trying to make sure that people understand, you know, being a single mom with three kids, she worked nights. My grandmother was struggling. It was very hard, and we were on welfare.
I'm mainly asking to try to connect your connection with it, because it's a different development over time. If it's that no one knows over 19 years versus, you know, someone sort of said something but really couldn't take notice. You know what I mean?
I think she always knew. I just think she always knew something happened. I don't think she really knew, but in her heart, she did. And for me, like, I love my mother, and me and my mother butt heads. That's just what it is. Me and my mother are complete opposites, and me and my grandmother are very similar. And when my grandmother had raised me, you know, my whole life, you know, when she had passed away, that was another pivotal thing in my life that started my demise at 16. But, well, you know, that's a little bit of a head. I didn't even know she knew. And for years, I was devastated the fact that I couldn't confide and tell her.
Yeah.
And I found out, and I'm trying not to get upset right now, but through that experience with my mother and I finally coming to terms with everything and doing the interview and coming out with this atonement video, I got closure on that because my mother said that she knew. And that to me was like huge weight lifted off my shoulders because
interesting. A lot of people take that differently. A lot of people would take it differently. What made you see it as a relief rather than what, you know, some people be, you mean that you knew the whole time and didn't help kind of thing. Right. But you saw that differently.
Yeah. I guess for me, like my grandmother, just knowing that something happened and that my mother knew or thought, it kind of made me more relieved because that's why I think my grandmother had me over there more and took and gave me the attention that I needed as a girl, the only girl in the family. I think if she didn't, I think it would have, I would have completely went to the opposite. Hmm. So I really think in a way, you know, they did the best they could. And again, my family's very old school. You don't talk about those things. You don't, you know, it's just not. And I remember going through living in that neighborhood, literally like hanging out with some friends and that person would walk right up, or going to a party and that person walking right up.
Oh my God. Over time that
just
develop a PTSD response.
Exactly. And that's, I have PTSD. And not just from that, but I had other several things that have gone through in my life where it has added to it.
The atonement, but you keep referencing the atonement video. Where can people watch the atonement video?
You can go on my Facebook, facebook.com/ABLaRoche. I have it under a folder called AB's Atonement. It's a sneak peek of one of the documentaries, which is my molestation. And I unfortunately wasn't able to, I was supposed to film the rest of it in September, but Spectre's kind of been taking off. So that had to be placed on the back burner, but it's extremely important to me to get done. And it's kind of exciting because I'm actually healing while I'm doing this, and I'm showing, and I want people to understand that where I've been and where I am now, it has taken years. And then also this last year, and I'm still working on myself to overcome all of this and the behaviors I've had to switch and my thought process and my emotions, and it, people can change. They just need to and want to, and they need to recognize it. And that's what I had to do. But
what began your change?
I think after dealing with so much stuff in my life, I came to a head in about a few years ago. I was just tired of making everybody else happy and not myself, and continuously being dumped on and treated like crap. And I went above and beyond for everybody, and no one went above and beyond for me. And, you know, and I really think when people say treat others the way you want to be treated, in a way, it's kind of bullshit. Because how can you treat everybody the way you want to be treated, but then you get treated like shit in return? So I feel like that sentence just doesn't seem right. It just doesn't make sense to me. So that's when I started changing my mindset and going, okay, AB's got to eat first. No one's going to eat first. And I'm not going to sit here and cater myself to other people and constantly extend myself for everybody else when at the end of the day, I'm miserable.
I think you're skipping something. What was it? What was the event or series? Something happened. There was a series of events or something. What was the epic? This is it. When you put AB's foot down, what was the final dump on that? You were just done. There's something. I feel like you skipped over something that somebody needs to hear.
Well, there's a lot in between here. We go from being 4 years old molested to.
Well, we talked through your about how that can carry forward, and I can kind of.
Yeah, but to be honest with you, in high school, I lived out of my car.
Shit.
So, yeah, there's a lot. So that's what I'm saying.
Okay, let's go back. What kind of car was in high school? My gosh, girl.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. I.
It's okay. No, I'm trying to follow the timeline here. Yeah. So when I was 15, 16 years old, we ended up moving up to upstate New York. My mother got remarried, and I have a stepbrother and a stepdad, and there was no jobs for my stepdad. So we had to pack up and move, and it was very devastating. And I love my parents, but my stepdad and my mother and I back then were, we had a terrible relationship. And I wanted to stay. I had a successful softball career. I was the fastest runner in Westside Little League in Rhode Island. I hit home runs out of the park. I was on an all-star team. I was one of the first varsity girls who was a freshman on cheerleading. Like, I was doing stuff in my life, and I had a game plan. I was going to go to Northwestern and go to business. And then after that, that was it. So, I had this game plan, and my parents were like, no, we're going to take you and we're going to move you hours away from everything you've ever known, your family. And for us Portuguese, and where I've grown up, is our cousins and aunts and uncles lived 5 or 10 minutes away. I mean, that's far. When you live hours away, you're non-existent. You're cut off, kind of. And that's the mindset that they have because it's old school. And
also your support group through everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
The last 10 years of your dealing with what you were dealing with, was that social environment. I mean, the grandma, the friends, even the sports. We could look at it like that. The sports themselves, these were your coping mechanisms of how you dealt with what you had. You latched onto your performance there because you were seeking the value there.
And then Adam, absolutely.
And then when you rip that away, man, I mean, that's a form of athlete's depression that I talk about. You left, so you lost all of your titles. You lost all the friends, all the social support.
I lost everything.
And mom. And some people would say, look, you just moved. But for a teenager who has had to find support in the environment as such, it becomes that more detrimental when it's taken away.
Absolutely. So we moved, and I had to start all over again. I went from a school with 500 people in my class to 500 people from 7th grade to 12th grade. Small, you know, there was a lot of money in this town, but it was a small school. And, you know, if you're good looking, you are the target. You are, all eyes are on you. We're going to fuck with you, and we're going to break you down. And my whole life, I had a game plan. Go to high school, Pilgrim High School. Go to Northwestern on a softball scholarship. And then after that, I didn't have a plan. But that was my whole thing. And, you know, it got ripped. And I go to this school where there's drugs. I mean, there was a guy that I actually dated when I moved there who should have graduated 2-3 years ago, but didn't.
So you move up the socioeconomic ladder and get into a worse school.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's that a lot, man. Those high-end private schools, access to the money, access to the drugs. It's access.
And it was a public school, too. I mean, the private school was up the road, but it didn't really, to me, it didn't matter. So when I got there, it was, I was pregnant several times, and, you know, all the boys wanted to date me, and the girls hated that. And so it was very hard. And, I mean, I went from a really great cheerleading program to these people, it was like the 1920s. Like, it was just complete mayhem.
But you did a 180, though. That's expected. Look what like we said, we covered the change shift. Yeah. That's technically what Dr. Gabor Mate would call trauma. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In a lot of areas. Exactly. So your response in being sexually active is appropriate, if you will, in its response to how you were affected.
And now I'm 16. So I'm 16 years old. So it's, you know, I'm getting into... At the time, I was meeting people. I was going to parties. You know, I was starting to drink. Now, mind you, my grandmother passed away. She had stayed with us. She went back to Rhode Island, and then she came back. She had cancer, and she passed away. And that was a traumatic experience because
being so connected to her, she basically knew you. And well, she was the support system through the molestation.
She was just a support my whole life. She was and I love my mother, but she was my mother. And she, so I, when I moved to New York, I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to move back to Rhode Island. I'm going to live with my grandmother. I'm going to take care of her and everything is going to be fine. Well, my great aunt had passed away and then my grandmother started not taking her meds and it stopped. You know, the patriarchs, the family that held this dynasty was crumbling. And now, mind you, again, we live in New York. So we were cut off pretty much. And my grandmother came up to stay with us. Now, the other thing about my life is my older brother is out of my life. I have cut him out completely due to alcoholism, physical, mental abuse between me and my other family members. I'm not going to get into them. I want to make sure that we talk about me because that's not my story for them. You know, this is my story to tell, not theirs. My older brother has a lot of issues and caused a huge rift with our family as well because of his issues. So he, at the time, you know, was living with my grandmother and, you know, stuff kind of went down and my grandmother was getting worse. So we moved her up and I stayed with her every single day when she was sick with us. Every single day. I didn't leave her side. I'd come home from school and stay with her. And she was getting worse, but then she would get better. Hmm. And again, like I'm 15, 16. And I...
So now you're a caretaker. So you've been a victim of molestation, of other types of trauma, social impact trauma, sexual trauma to an extent as a teenager by the decisions made, the pregnancies in and out that you had to go through at that young age.
No, I wasn't pregnant. Those were just rumors.
Well, hey.
No.
So even still, I mean,
get hot here.
It's still bullying to an extent, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I was tortured.
Now a caretaker to the one you love most at 16, which really should not be doing. A 16-year-old, anyone that young should not be caretaking, especially for the one that raised them. And I mean, that's what I mean. So at 16, experiencing, you could just call them 3 to 4 serious traumas before, you know, that age. And we didn't even talk about the divorce and then we won't get into the brother issue. I mean, you're talking 5, 6, 7 different traumas. Less than, well, you're 4. So you're talking really 10 years, 10, 12 years.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my mother worked, my stepfather worked, they took care of her too. But it was just heartbreaking for me. And I, the day before she died, and I apologize, but this is the first time I'm actually talking about it. I haven't talked about it and years. So, I got invited to go out to, out with a friend of mine who, I'm not friends with them anymore, but they were trouble. And I was rebelling because she was sick and I just didn't know how to deal with it all. I didn't know how to cope. I had no friends. I just, you know, went to parties and drank and, you know, lashed out. So I went out and, before I went out, I went over to her bed and I said, Grandma, I said, sorry. Is it okay if I go out? I said, because I don't want to leave you. And she said, no, you go. You go and have a good time. And I said, okay. I said, I'll be right back tomorrow. So I get a phone call the next morning. I was on my way to the mall. I was going to stop at the mall with my friend Danielle. She had a car. I didn't have a car yet. And my mother says, you need to get home. So I got home and I got in the door. And actually at the same time, my grandmother's friend who was elderly came up with her son to see her as well. Was trying to get into the door to see her. And she had passed away. She held on when I got there. And I regretted that every day, leaving. You know?
There's no need for regret. You can't pick those times. And even if you were there, it doesn't change how it went out. More than likely, your grandma wouldn't want you to see that go out anyway. You know, you had seen her fall from grace, if you will, in a health standard anyway. So, again, even on her way out, she was protecting you. She was still looking out for you, because you being there could have been even more traumatic. So the idea of the guilt and shame you may feel for not being there, there is none related there. You know, guilt and regret, for one, that you feel the guilt, you know you're a human being now. Because if you didn't feel guilty on some level, you would be a narcissist or a borderline and be out of your mind. So be happy you feel a little guilty about that, because that makes you human. But I do want to tell you, since we didn't plan to talk about this, so, you know, when we lose somebody, that how we frame it is, we never really lose them. It's about redefining the relationship. You know, I talk about, if a friend or someone we loved moved to Antarctica, we'd probably never see them or talk to them again.
Yeah.
They were still with us, and we're still with them. And so every moment that you think about that makes you smile, what she may have said, a moment you had with her, these are moments to where the relationship is simply redefined. And if we frame it as we lose them, it can feel as if it's detrimental. But the reality is it's truly about celebrating them by remembering, by redefining that relationship. And I think your story, AB, speaks to a redefining of your relationship with your mother and your grandmother.
As absolutely you evolve,
I kind of feel like you're doing kind of something that maybe they felt like they couldn't do or didn't have a chance to do, and maybe that spawned this whole AB LaRoche, you know, 180 takeover comeback thing, you know. But I'm serious, you know, in a way. I don't think if you don't experience those traumas, are you near the alpha woman today that you self-proclaim, right? That you are, and that you've lived. So, you know, there's always, I hate saying it, but there's silver linings to those traumas that we experience. Because without that, you may not have been in the ring with Danny.
Absolutely. Trust me, there have been days and years that I wanted to wish that I had a different life. And I placed these facades on myself all of these years. You know, I would be a different person. In so many situations, I was never showing myself. So I've wanted the life I wanted, so I would pretend everything was the way it should have been when it wasn't. And now...
That's an early life victory. You know why you do that.
Yeah.
You did
that. So now I'm so happy about all of those things.
Wow. Dude, you're such a champ. I'm sorry. I get excited when I realize you had to do that to survive your childhood. That's an early life victory. So that's a coping skill that you learned to get through. Okay, I'm fine. Everything's great. Nothing happened. You know, you're just, I'm the best. I can do this. Well, that.
And I was
right
pushing along, and I just kept, you know, I just knew that I was better than this. I was better than that neighborhood. I was better than what everything was handed to me. I just knew that I was better. And I can't describe it, but inside I just kept saying to myself, like, there's something more. There's just something more, and I'm special. And I said this to Danny when we first met. He said, I'm special. And I said, and I know a lot of people say, like, oh, I'm special. But I just always knew deep inside of me that there is something about me that nobody has. And I am so different that I need to be out there. And I just can't put my finger on it. But, and I don't mean being famous or being all, because be honest with me, I don't want any of that. But
well, I'm sorry, but I'm going to help you. Not many people go, hey, I was molested at 4. Make me famous. Okay, so there's no approach here thinking that you deserve some famous person, because I mean, there's crazy things that work, but I mean, the truth is it's not like you see the story, so it's painful. Look what you just did. I mean, you just painfully purged in the middle of a live podcast. So, you know, think about that, people, before you accuse somebody of trying to be famous when she says wanting to be out there. It's a different connection.
So after my grandmother died, I had two options. I was going to drop out of high school, or I was going to move back to Rhode Island by myself. Take a moment, guys. Sorry, I don't mean to, but literally at 16 years old, I made a decision that either I was going to drop out of high school in New York, or I was going to move back to Rhode Island by myself. So I decided to move back to Rhode Island by myself because my older brother dropped out. And I saw how well that worked for him. And I knew again that I was better than that. That was not...
Thank God for him.
Yeah.
Silver lining.
Silver lining. There was another silver lining. And again, and a lot of people don't know this, and I know my little brother doesn't like me saying this, but I stepped up as a role model for him. I took care of him. I looked out for him. I also was taking now the role of the older sibling out of all of this. Making sure my
mother.
Yeah. I was everybody's mother, taking care of everybody else, but I wasn't taking care of me and nobody was taking care of me.
Well, we do that to keep us distracted from taking care of self.
Exactly. And I kept doing that. I didn't like to sit. I just kept doing stuff.
So you didn't even like to be alone. When we can't be alone and we got to keep helping other people to avoid our own, brother. Yeah, gosh, man, I called you brother. You get me deep. I'm like, that's serious, though. That's when you know, though. I mean, a lot of people see it as, well, I'm helping everybody every day. But, you know, until we really help us and reveal our authentic self, man, helping others is a distraction.
So then, you know, I moved back. I lived with this girl and I lived in the basement of her parents' house where we shared a bedroom. And it was filthy. It was just so disgusting. I don't want to get graphic, but there were, cat droppings and just dirty. And I just didn't care. I was like, I'm out, I'm where I need to be. And, now mind you, I already missed like a year and a half. That's a long time in high school. And I was the tomboy. I was like no makeup. My hair was always slicked back in a ponytail or in a bun. And now I'm a completely different person. My hair's down, straight, curly, makeup. Like I'm still tomboy, but I'm different. And so everybody's like, who the hell is this coming back? And I was living with this girl and I would go home on the weekends and she was very promiscuous. And at the time I had one encounter with somebody, which again was a falling out of my grandmother's death. So over being high and drunk. So that wasn't exactly a good start of my sexual experience with people. So I came home one time and I find a dildo underneath my pillow. And I said, okay, I got to get out of here. My underwear was being stolen. Money was being stolen. I said, I got to get out of here. Now, mind you, I don't have a car.
This fucks with me, man, because you're 16. I have a 16-year-old. You know what I mean? So for me, I'm just imagine my little baby in some environments like this, having to be alone, moving like that. I mean, so anybody out there that has a daughter, just imagine that shit. You know, oh, fuck.
So I don't have a relationship with my real dad at this point. My older brother now is living at my grandmother's house. And me and my brother started talking a little bit. And my brother's like, why don't you come live with me at grandma's house? I said, fine. Awesome. Get me the hell out of here. Well, I went from one bad situation to another. I was in the safe place. But my grandmother wasn't there. I was now living with the devil. In my safe place.
Yeah.
His girlfriend lived there. And then my father ended up moving in. And that was the first time I saw my father since I was probably 7 years old. So, and I have to tell you, the silver lining, like you keep saying.
This is 1 year.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. So the silver lining that, that's when me and my father started building our relationship. I just let him have it. And ever since then we've had a relationship. So, you know, the silver lining, but, with the silver lining also came another thing. My older brother has an alcohol problem. He's got some serious issues and, everybody's fault was everybody else's. Everybody owed him everything.
Exhibiting the addictive behaviors. How long were you in this environment from 16 to when?
I was in there for about 3 or 4 months. So the big, huge event that happened was I wanted to go to a car show with some friends. It was like maybe like Rhode Island's very close to New Hampshire. So it's only a few hour drive and we would be back the same day. I asked my father, I asked his girlfriend, I got the okay. My brother was at the time, I think there was a hurricane and he went down to go help with the trees. You know, he cut the trees at the time and did all that. And he calls me up wasted and he said, get your ass home or your shit's going to be on the curb. And in my safe house that I grew up in, your shit's going to be on the curb if you don't come home. Wasted. So I get in, and now I'm starting to drive. You know, I have my own car, and I get there, and he is irate. And I haven't talked about this either. He was so drunk, he slammed me up against the wall and beat the shit out of me. So I ended up taking all my stuff and living out of my car.
You can't trust anybody. At this point, you've lost anyone to trust, yeah. Love. All the safe places are gone. They've all lied to you since 4. You've been, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
You
know, this is me talking about it every time. It's a healing thing. And I'm showing people that I'm not this like glamorous thing walking around. I've been through shit. Like I alpha female, I use that as I've gone through hell. Like I earned that title. Before I even knew it.
So, I mean, you got, oh my God. And you're still 16 now?
I am 16 and a half. I am actually, now I'm living out of my car. I lived with a few friends in and out of my car. Now I'm in Rhode Island. So all of these friends I have since, you know, I've grown up, my best friend, Louie, he's a year older than me. He graduated already. I'm starting my end of my junior year. Going into my senior year I was cheerleading. I was helping coach cheerleading for the junior high I used to go to for his younger sister. And I used to pick her up to take her to school because it was on the way. And I said, I can't pick you up today. There's just no room. Again, I didn't want people knowing. I was so embarrassed. And this goes back to, like I said, when I was 4, these are my problems. I don't want people feeling bad for me or throwing it in my face later. This is a situation that I got myself into. I need to get myself out. I moved out of Rhode Island. I'm living with my decision and I need to do what I have to do because this was my choice and I have to do this. Like there's no other way. So she ended up telling her mom, who then the mom called the principal at the school. And I will never forget this woman. She was amazing to me. She called me into her office and she said, what's going on? And she was just awesome because I think she knew stuff was going on because I had to drop out of softball. The one thing that I loved the most, I dropped out of softball and I lied to my friends and my coach. I said, oh, my father's sick. I got to take care of him. Meanwhile, I was living out of my car and I had the shit kicked out of me. I had to make a choice. I couldn't balance softball like I could before, where I had a safe house. I was stable to now I was living out of my car. I was battered. I was broken. I had to take care of myself. I had a job. I had to work. You know, I needed money. I wasn't getting, my parents didn't have much. So this was again, my choice. So I had to make a decision. So I lied. And there's the video I did of my first 7-day Facebook video challenge that I did with Danny. And I talked about it and I apologized to friends that I grew up with about it because I lied to them. And I carried that around with me for a long time. So the principal called me in and spoke to Louie's mom and they said, you're going to go live with Louie's mom. So I lived in the basement of my friend Louie's house, next to the washer and dryer with a white curtain to separate my bedroom for my senior year. it was a better environment that I've been in.
Yeah, for me, when you say the white curtain, I'm like, hey, it's a great upgrade. So for me, I'm like, sorry, no response. Hey, yeah, you got a room that no one's beating you. No one's on drugs. No one's on drunk. No one's hurting you. I was like, all right, upgrade. Yeah,
same. Yeah, finally.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, at the time, I'm a senior in high school, dealt with all of this stuff. I should be like worrying about who I'm going to be dating, what boy am I going to be, or what college?
No, you're not. No, you're not. I'm a dad. No, you're not. You're never. I'm kidding. I'm totally
never. But, I should have been worrying about what I was going to wear or who my date was or what college I was going to. But I couldn't see out of what I had in front of me. And, you know, with those things too, and I mean, I will be very honest, I got myself in situations with at times at parties that I shouldn't have got myself into, being completely drunk, you know, at a high school party, or saying I'm staying at somebody's house when I'm actually at a party, or, you know, hanging out with the wrong type of guys. And just, I started to just, that was like a way of me coping, because it was just like, I just didn't know how to take all of this in. You know, I'm on my own, but then yet I'm not. And I'm kind of an adult because I'm dealing with adult issues, but then I'm still a child. I'm still a kid. And like, what the hell am I doing? So I ended up graduating high school with honors, which I wouldn't have done in New York. And then I moved back to New York. I lived with my parents.
You finished it all.
Yeah. Not bad, right?
You finished it all. Shit.
Yeah. And I knew in a way that my older brother was trying to do everything he could to make sure that I wasn't successful. Hmm. I still have this feeling because he didn't graduate, and he just, I think he didn't want to be that. He didn't want somebody superseding him. I really think that at the end of the day, that's, he was trying to do what he had, what he needed to do. Hmm. I'm not agreeing with it, but no. I think that was his way.
Maybe he also sees it as a reminder of what he didn't do. So a lot of times that projection, that displacement, people don't know how to handle the emotion. And like you, he wasn't taught it, raised it. He saw all the same things you did. So in his response to it, he didn't know what else, you know. So for
absolutely
him, it's more of a reminder, especially being the older one. I can imagine. I have an older brother, 8 years older than me. You know, I can imagine the feeling of going, shit, you know, I should have been there for, you know, maybe he said I should have proven that. So, I mean, what you went through as a teenager, what you were doing was self-harm, essentially. It was
absolutely
self-destruction, because you figured nobody else wanted me or treated me kindly. I might as well treat myself unkindly and have fun, AKA along the way. And if you look at it, your brother was trapped in the same thing, is he's responding destructively because no one else loves him. So why should he?
Yeah.
And you follow. And,
absolutely. And I want to make sure all the listeners understand too, you might have several siblings in your family, but each sibling has a different, might have been living in the same house as you, but each person has a different experience growing up.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, I know that's kind of a mind-blowing sentence, but like, seriously, no, my little brother will not acknowledge, I don't want to say that he doesn't acknowledge, but again, his childhood was the complete opposite, because my little brother is like my favorite person in the world. Love him to death. And growing up, I was protecting him so that he had the childhood that I should have. And the college experience.
No, I'm stopping you there, girl. Stop. You would never say he had the child experience. You should have. Because I call that shooting all over yourself. Stop shooting all over yourself. Because, again, as we've already discerned, had you not been through what you've been through, you would not be the person today that you are speaking and touching. So what you did was give him a less traumatic and good childhood is what you did. Don't compare it to what you didn't have.
No, that's a good point. No, you make an extremely valid point. Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that he had something better. And that's so,
and you did.
So, you know, I moved back home, And I started community college. Again, still hung out with the wrong crowd. I was dating a guy who was selling drugs, who, you know, bad part of Trenton. No, that's New Jersey. I'm sorry. Poughkeepsie. You know, I was hanging around with this girl who slept around and, you know, just smoked weed. And
you felt that we deserve. Look, we accept the love we think we deserve, and we hang out with who we think we deserve as well. You know what I mean? So it's, hey, this is what's going to happen. Yeah.
I had a fake ID when I was 16. I was going into clubs. I was, you know, it was just not appropriate. And I was going to college, and I don't know it. I don't know how it came about. I was walking in the mall, and you know how they have those modeling, hey, sign up for the modeling thing, whatever.
Yeah.
So I did. And I started working with this. I actually started working with an agent, and I started modeling when I was going to community college. I was traveling about 3 or 4 days a week and then going to school at night. I started working and I started traveling. I just, at 18 years old, was at Sturgis Bike Rally for the first time, working, and was good. There for a week.
Good.
And then, and that's actually kind of a huge pivotal point for me, because that's when I had my first panic attack.
Well, I know you said you had lunch at 1:15.
Actually, we're good. I pushed it back.
Now, did you? Okay. All right.
Until 2:00. So.
All right. All right. Because I was going to say, we can always, nope, we can always go part
we're
2.
We're in it.
All right.
Sleeves are up. The gloves are off. Let's fucking go. Let's do this.
All right. Now, how do you deal with the anxiety today? Are you okay with it?
So
Well, I'm just saying, let's not walk anywhere that you're not prepared to walk.
Listen, I am ready. Trust me, I am good. You are getting more than anybody else will ever get on a podcast.
I tend to do that.
Well, that's good. I'm glad. I'm happy. I am not regretting any of this so far at all. This is...
Not yet. Wait till tomorrow.
Okay. No, actually, I'm pretty good, actually. I know I'm smiling, but...
Yeah.
I'm in a good place in my life now that I can talk about this. Okay. So,
well, anxiety can be tricky. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Before you walk into your first panic attack, I wanted to make sure that, you know, before you start walking into it, okay here. Cause yeah. I can tell you from here to start talking about what's in the present, describe the room for me, et cetera.
Yeah.
All right. Just understand, you start feeling that heart rate go up. Just start what you see right in front of your face.
Thank God for power of truth, because I've worked through some of that.
While we're on it, I'm giving a good tip out there to some people that do deal with anxiety seriously. First, remember, it's self-created. We create our own anxiety. So if you can acknowledge the fact that you create what you feel, then you can control it. Now, sometimes it does get the best of you. And if you feel the heart rate increasing, you feel that coming upon you, what I need you to do is a good little tip. Is literally whatever is around you, begin to describe it to a T. Tell me that there is gray soundproof on the wall. There are two lights in the corner that have black stands on them. There's a white table with three microphones and right. Start describing literally right in front of you over and over what the room looks like. That is the fastest way to bring you to the present. So that's a little anxiety tip. So proceed, madam.
So I'm in the middle of Sturgis Bike Week. I have never been away from home this far with a bunch of girls. I don't do very well with girls. that's changed, but back then I did do very well with girls or certain girls. And of course, you know, again, I was bullied. I'm attractive. I'm a good looking girl. And, you know, of course, when you are, that's like a target. You have a huge target on your ass. And I'm very modest. I'm very like humble. I don't walk around going, oh my God, I am a hot piece of ass and blah, blah, blah. Maybe I should, but I don't. And
don't shit on yourself again.
I know. But what I'm saying is I'm a very humble person. So I don't walk around like that. And I think other people think that they have this mindset, and they're like, all right, you know what? We're going to take her down or whatever. So I was also doing this bike week with these girls, and we also had a stage show where we would dance, and like, it was huge. We were at the Broken Spoke, and it was on the Discovery Channel. And it was like this huge, big, you know, I'm 18 and, you know, doing this dance performance twice a night. And I'm waking up at, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning until 3 o'clock in the morning and then doing it all over again. And it just, for 3 days, it was just too much. And then I started burning up and I felt like an elephant was on my chest. And for 2.5 days, I just sat in bed with, I couldn't lay down and I couldn't sit up. It was like, I was like on an angle and I literally felt like I was dying and I didn't understand what was happening. I didn't understand what was going on. I thought I was like sick because of the traveling and the schedule. And I just didn't understand it. And somebody, I think, said to me, I think you're having a panic attack. And I said, me? Have a panic attack? Like, what is that? Like, yes. I don't have panic attacks.
Then yes. If that's the response, then yes. That's that alpha response.
Well, I don't have. I never had it before. You know, I was like, I'm just, you just
scary. Keep pushing through. It's fucking scary, man. For some,
it is.
Yeah.
It's very scary. I literally felt like I was dying.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was like, this, something's not right. So now fast forward, you know, I've been modeling for 10 years. I've traveled. I started my own modeling business. I got rid of the agent. I was making my own connections. I started traveling for different companies, learning the product, selling it. And what was different was I wanted to have my clothes on. I wanted to be edgy and sexy and give a positive message to younger girls in the motorcycle industry because all I saw was nakedness. And I wanted to give an empowerment of you can still be sexy with your clothes on and people can take you seriously. And I've had several guys say to me, I just went down to that booth and that girl didn't know what she was talking about, but you do. And I'm going to buy this. And it's like, holy shit. So I started doing that and I just kind of, it was doing great. And I was going to school. I was still at the community college and then the economy crashed. And then it just went because what I did was extra for their business. Well, they got to cut the extras. Oh. Motorcycle is a extra and it's a novelty.
Yep.
So then I said, okay, I'm at this shitty job. I'm like, I got to get out of here. I can't stay with my parents. I got to get my bachelor's degree. And through this, I'm dating, you know, I'm in relationships with men. Things weren't working out because I was traveling all the time. Men were insecure. I was taking care of them. It was
picking the same one over and over and over again, you mean?
Yeah, it was the same. It was the same thing. And I was like, you know what? Fine. I'll be single. You know, and again, I'm getting in myself with within people I shouldn't have been doing. You know, I shouldn't have been involved with them. So then I said, okay, my parents are not going to be paying for me for the rest of my life. You know, I'm still like helping my little brother out, buying him clothes. Like now I'm home. I'm there. I gotta leave. Like this isn't working for me. So I packed up my stuff after visiting New Jersey, packed up my stuff and I just moved. I had a studio apartment at 23, moved out for there for a job and the job didn't work out. I was miserable for the first 3 days. And I said, this isn't going to work. So then I ended up getting a job that was an hour away at a salon. And then I ended up working at a newspaper, worked my way up. I ended up being the rep for Princeton, New Jersey for the newspaper, which is a very affluent area. So I went from a secretary to the sales rep for that territory, which is a
very madman of you. Very madman of you.
Very, thank you. And I didn't have to sleep with anybody.
What's her name? Peggy and Mad Men?
Yeah.
Very creative.
So my life in so many ways has been very serendipitous. I loved Princeton. I couldn't wait to be in Princeton, but I didn't live in Princeton. And I worked my way up to then be the sales rep of downtown Princeton, like within a year of when I moved.
You got confirmation. It was justification. You said, "There it is. I've been validated here in my performance." So yeah, it was that was the switch on, if you will.
Yeah. So I don't mean to cut everybody short, but you know, we want to fast forward a little bit because it is 1:30, and I don't want to run out of time. But we might have to do a part two. So
Yeah, we can always do that. We can knock it here and come back. I mean, because I mean, this is live now, but
I wanted to talk about, you know, just this last year for me.
Walk us through.
So I'm sorry if we're all over the place, guys, if you're listening. Like I said, I have volumes of my life that we could go into.
This is what we do. It's the rampage. Anyone listening and watching this later, trust me, they get it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because if you see on my Facebook, I did a post. I mean, I have over a dozen. So, I mean, we could sit here for days. But so last year, I moved back to Connecticut, New York for I work for the government. Government contracting company. I can't say, sorry.
Yeah, no, please leave it out. I don't want to be affiliated with anything that says
contract. Okay, good.
Usually death or killer comes after that. So I'm good.
Yeah. So I moved there. I moved back, for this job. I started, you know, working for the, contracting companies, you know, after I was in the newspaper. And I wanted to come back towards my parents and my family because, you know, I needed that stability again. Now, I haven't had that since I was 14, 15 years old, being around everybody. I wanted that back again. Well, what I used to have when I was growing up isn't what it is now. Mm. And I negotiated, you know, a higher salary, which was awesome. And I got myself in this huge condo. I got this huge condo because I thought everybody was going to come visit. Well, nobody came and visited me. And I started taking money from my savings to pay for it because while we were negotiating and me getting into this job, they cut $5,000 from what we originally agreed upon. So in that transition, I already signed the papers. So 4 months go by. And again, I'm just dating these losers living at home. They have their drinking issues. They have, you know, emotional issues. They're not, you know, they're nowhere near where I am. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? I ended up moving in with my aunt and uncle, who have been really great examples for me, that have kind of shown me the life that I can have. You know, they're married. They have, you know, my nieces, and they're just, it's a great environment to be in. And so I live on the side of the house. I moved in with them and I'm like, I got to clean my mess up. This is a mess and I am going down a bad road. I feel like I am seeing my older brother tenfold and I'm like, I got to stop. Something's not right.
What were you doing?
I just kept dating the wrong guys and I'm taking care of everybody. I moved here and I lost thousands of dollars of moving to be closer to family who don't really give a shit about me. They don't make an effort.
It's common that you go through something like that at 15, like you did. And then once you become stable and successful, you're going to then be the matriarch, the one or the patriarch, if you're male, and you come back and you're going to be the one to put it all together and then show them, you know, see, I'm glad I could bring it together. That's a common response that happened. I did the same shit, and yeah. It failed. It failed.
Fucking.
Yeah.
Because you're like giving all of yourself to everybody else, but you're left with nothing. Yeah. So I said something.
Two, three times until I learned. I just kept failing at it, going, all right, now then we'll be fine. Fuck, you're the same motherfucker. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah. Oh. You know, yeah. That can be destructive.
So, I reached out. I saw a video from Sean Whalen, Lions Not Sheep. And I was like, I got to do this. And I don't know how me and Danny connected. I think I messaged him because he was on the Lions Not Sheep. And I said, I need to do this. How do I do this? Well, we don't do women. I said, what do you mean you don't do women? He's like, we don't do women. I said, I need to do this. I've tried therapy. I've tried medication. I have tried everything. I need to do this. This is my last resort. We don't do it. So he's like, I said, I need a coach. I need something. I need somebody. And he goes, I'll coach you. And I said, Danny, I don't make a lot of money. Like I need the help. And it's not that I don't want to put the money in, but I'm trying to get myself back on track. So he said, no problem. We'll work something out. So several months go by and I'm working with Danny. Now with Lions Not Cheap, they give you the tools during the event and then you go through these stages. Well, Danny was giving me the tools, but I didn't go through the stages. I didn't go through the events that are tied. And I said to him about, I think April, May, I said, Danny, this isn't working anymore. I'm doing everything and things are changing, but in here it's not. I'm still feeling and thinking. And I said, it's just not working. He said, all right. I said, I need to do your, it was before Power of Truth, but his retreat. I said, I'm doing your retreat. He's like, I don't do women. And I said, too fucking bad. You're doing women. You're going to do it and you're going to like it. And I couldn't believe that I actually got him to do it, because after I'm like, oh shit, what the hell did I get myself into? Because now I'm like, fuck, if I fail, I'm having all of these other women look at me, all these other men look at me, and I can't fail.
Yeah, but that's where you excel, though. You excel exactly. When you hit the point of can't fail. That's where you excel.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't start. So I was like, shit.
You're running a company at the same time or something over there.
I know, right? Listen, I am running Spectre and...
I know. For everybody talking about, again, Danny Page, that you can listen to on Cognitive Rampage. It's episode 91. You'll learn all about Danny, and you can look up Rush Club and a bunch of other stuff too. But that's who she's referencing.
So I did his retreat, and then just things clicked. I was tired of these fake facades that I kept putting on. I just was like, why do I have to keep being a different person every time I'm with different people? The retreat just like snapped everything in place. And while I was there, if you see his video, I was hyperventilating.
Where can I find the video? Is that on Danny's face?
It's on Danny's. It's on mine. You see parts of the video of he puts me in the ring with this girl. And my breathing is out of control. I haven't been able to breathe before. And after that, I haven't had a panic attack. I haven't had problems with breathing. I'm recognizing my breathing. I'm recognizing when I'm upset, my boundaries with people. I remove myself from situations. I don't drink that much anymore. I actually don't put myself in situations where I used to, because that's when stuff starts going bad. And a complete 180 from who I used to be. And then Spectre just started rolling out, and it's just been kind of a whirlwind the last few months.
And what's Spectre?
So Spectre is, hold on, I have to write a note for somebody. Hold on.
I love the full name of it too. It's Spectre Ink Slinger. I think that was pretty, yeah. That's catchy.
It's fucking hot. So Spectre is a social media management and ghostwriting company that I established. So through my life, I've been told, Amy, you've always had a notebook. Well, through all of these traumatic experiences, I forgot about that. I'm just like focusing on work and goals and saving and, you know, keeping everything in the past. And I forgot about that one thing that I always did. And so what Spectre does is it supports busy entrepreneurs. I don't know about you, but, you know, it's very hard to just run a business and then you have social media now. So that's two businesses you're running.
Yes.
And you have to be creative and you have to be consistent. So, you know, my company strives to save you time while producing quality content that will keep your customers coming back. And for me, Spectre is kind of like a consultation and provides wide variety of services that you can just ultimately support you, ranging from even your personal to your business. You know, I have right now a high profile client that I can't say. And the whole point of Spectre is I'm a ghost. I can morph into whatever type of business, a person, a thing. I had a meal prep company I was working on for a while. I edited somebody's book that's huge on social media. Right now, like I said, I have a huge client who is absolutely phenomenal. But again, it allows the person to, I'm allowed to keeping my anonymity, and so are they. Because if people found out that other people were writing for them, it loses its luster. It loses its the personal touch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I make every post that I post. All my shit's all me, man. Every email, every.
And it's hard. It is hard, though.
Yeah, I could. If I could not have to do that, I would probably get 20-30% of my workday back, maybe, you know, because I try to respond to everybody.
Exactly.
You want to be nice and interact and like, shit, yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I do. I help interact and I help keeping your feed up and I keep making sure that your algorithms are high and I keep making sure that the junk is out. And, you know, I do a wide variety of things, but I also work with the client. You know, I sit with them every few weeks. We go through a plan. What topics do you want to cover? I let them see stuff. I want to make sure that it's still authentic. But I also want to give them what I do, which is creative, which is detailed, which is description. People want to feel when they read. And a lot of people don't give that. Yeah. And that's what's missing. And that's why, you know, Josh Hollibs, that we were on live last night, you know, that's what I'm bringing to his book. He's got the story. Now Spectre is going to come in and help support it. So it's going to be a great project. So, you know, usually I don't disclose my clients, but me and Josh had decided, you know, this is such a huge project for vets that it needs to be, everything needs to be out. And this is your
creation to escape the corporate golden handcuff.
Absolutely. You know, I am a different person when I'm at work and it's starting to conflict. I am tired of being a robot. I'm tired of constantly obeying people that don't know what they're doing, don't know what they're talking about.
Good word, obeying people. That's a strong, good, that's true.
Well, it is. And to be honest with you, for the last year, I have been fucked with. And I am over it. I am tired. I am, as a female, I am tired of it. And there are several females that have left since I've started who are good people, who are hard workers and who are super smart that had to leave because of the industry and because of being treated a certain way. And ethics and this HR stuff, it's bullshit. And a situation ended up happening where, like I said on my first Day 7 Book Challenge, that they were trying to stomp on my goals and my dreams of trying to release this before it was even launched. I don't even know how it came about, and it's very disgusting, and it's just what it is. But I'm not going to allow that to keep pushing me to stop doing what I'm doing. And I do have a target on my back now, not only because now they know I'm starting a business, but I'm not keeping my mouth shut anymore about being treated poorly.
Oh, they know. Oh, I promise they're going to know. Well, this show will air on Thursday on the – or Monday. No, I'm going to air this Monday on the podcast, so they'll know.
So I love this. I love what I'm doing. I love my clients. I love being able to be who I am all the time.
Freedom.
And not having to dress a certain way and be a certain way. And that's the other thing. I threw out bags of clothes because the inside wasn't matching the outside. So now I am actually starting to match the outside, and it's extremely exciting for me because I'm actually enjoying it. I'm enjoying this process because I was making the outside try to reflect the inside together and perfect and, you know, all these things. And I wasn't. And now for the first time in my life, I'm super excited because I'm happy with who I am in the inside. And I want that to reflect.
Come on, girl. Rampage. There's people that want to quit their fucking job right fucking now.
You know, it is messy. And I mean, there have been several times that I was going to quit. I'm like, this is bullshit. How can fucking people do this? This is fucking stupid. Like, I'm not dealing with this. Fuck you. Like, and it's been hard. I mean, I wake up at 4 in the morning. I work on Spectre. I go to work. I come home. I go to the gym and I work on Spectre until 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. And I do it all over again. And on my weekends, I try, you know, I'm constantly going. And there are days that I'm exhausted and I have to remind myself, I need a break. I need to break because I can't keep doing this, but I love it so much that when I get out of work, I just want to do it. I just want to keep working. But the corporate environment is sucking my energy and my vibe because it is so toxic and everybody's vibes are so bad that it's pulling from my energy. And when I get home, I'm exhausted and it's like, I'm not creative. And it's just like for the first time in my life, I'm not going to take care of everybody else and making sure that I have money saved and making sure that there's money put away for everybody else. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do what I love and what I want to do. And I know I'm going to be 30 in a month and I'm finally realizing this, but that's a huge eye opener. Like, I'm going to do what I love to do because everybody else has. Why not me? So now it's my fucking turn.
So what would you tell, what you're at right now is crossing the river of freedom is hard when you're, because it begins with letting go of social constructs. You mentioned there as you threw your stuff away, you got rid of a bunch of shit. I mean, I did the same. I'm a full on minimalist to the most that I can be as a dad, but you know, when you shed social constructs mentally, when you drop the idea of, you know, personal truths and bring in perception and you start to master self like that, you begin to open and move fast. The brain begins to move quicker, but it's still that process. And part of, I also wanted to bring you on too, is for just that, what you just went off on was there's people out there that haven't started yet to cross the river, to leave and change shores. And, you know, a lot of people I know wait, they'll go, all right, as soon as I got this much money saved up, I'll leave my job and then start my business. Yeah. And it rarely happens that way. It happens like you just described it. It's working both areas until you cross that bridge, until you can kind of make that transition. And I think that is very encouraging to the corporate people watching, those that are doing that are going to work every day to make someone else's dream a reality rather than their own. And I know they have those dreams. But it's like that experience with Danny, though. I'm going back to that sparks it because I talk about in my book that experiences, just moments, one little moment can change your life forever. And as long as we're open to that change in those experiences, and by you pushing Danny had to also be open to change by never working.
Absolutely.
So he was open to change with a female that let you into open to a change. And in that experience in the ring, something he experiences, these are moments that happen and you ran with it. And that was the powerful transition story, you know, that I think a lot of people need to hear, because so many people come on podcasts that have already crossed the bridge, that are already over here, millionaire entrepreneurs, are very successful. And you hear those stories all the time. It's fucking getting redundant on podcasts where it's like,
Absolutely. And I don't mean to cut you off, but like there's actually an event coming up that I wasn't able to talk about last night, that it's such a huge event where I actually said to them, I said, you guys are already successful and you're going to talk to people who are starting a business. You need to have somebody else on there who's in the trenches. And I said, and I actually wasn't even trying to get on it. And the person's like, you should be on it. And I said, no, I was like, wait a second, that's not. And they were like, nope, I'll hook it up. You're going to do it. But and I'm waiting for me to be able to announce it because it is so big and it's like, holy shit. But I'm like, you need people want to hear the struggle. People want to hear how you got to where you are. And, you know, Josh was saying to me a few months ago when we started talking, I'm a lobster right now. And when you're a lobster, lobsters go through where they're growing their skin and it's tough and it hurts. And but that's when you know change is happening and that's where you're supposed to be. Yeah. And I will tell you, and Josh will tell you, it's fucking hurt. I mean, you know, he's a great friend and he's been, you know, somebody I've been leaning on. He's very successful in his stuff. So I've leaned on him and Danny and a couple other people. So it's been great.
As uncomfortable as where the change is.
That's exactly. And I need to tell people, you got to keep going. Like, I wouldn't be sitting here right now on this podcast with you working with Josh or having this event coming up that I'm going to be doing if I didn't keep pushing. And trust me, there have been a lot of stuff that people have been trying to knock me down.
Cut you off. There's a rampage right here on the surface. I can see it coming, but it needs the right question. And I'm going to pose that question. I believe it's close to it.
Bring it on, Nancy.
For the person in particular, you know, I'm going to be gender specific, so don't kill me, people. But for the woman that's sitting there working that corporate job, wondering about maybe even a single woman, it doesn't matter. But that woman that's pushing it, that hasn't quite started building her boat to cross the bridge yet, but is thinking about it. What would you tell her right now?
I hate saying this because I hate when people say it. You know, people say, find what you love and your passion and then go for it. Mm-hmm. Bitch, please. It's not that easy.
Hi, girl.
Bitch, please. Good. You know, right now everybody wants to be a fucking life coach. And that's another thing I'm tired of seeing too. A lot of people should not be a fucking life coach. End of story. I mean, I'm telling you this, guys, I'm unfriending you and I'm unfollowing because I'm tired of seeing this shit. You know, how can you be a life coach if you're not even going through half the shit? Okay, enough. Mic drop. With that said,
I'm in. I'm back.
The people that should be a life coach should be teaching people what they should be doing. And I will be honest with you, Danny said, Amy, you're an amazing writer. I said, what are you fucking talking about? What are you talking about? Like, my, when I had to write some stuff about why I wanted to change, he goes, you're an amazing writer. And then a couple months later, I got in touch with my old friend Mike from high school. He goes, yeah, you used to carry around this notebook. I said, what? He said, yeah, you were always writing in this book, telling your story, writing in this book. And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, yeah, every time I tried to look, you'd smack me. And I'm like, huh. And it's funny because Danny had said that. And I went, it's all tying now. Like, again, serendipitous that I have in my life. And then I started writing. And everybody started loving my posts. And then it just kind of went into that. And I love it. And it gives me an outlet. And people, when you find something that you really enjoy, that you want to not stop working on, that's your passion. That's what you love. And you don't have to be a ghostwriter. You don't have to be a social media manager. Don't be a life coach. Don't do what everybody else is doing. Do completely opposite. You know, there are so many social media managements out there, and that's fine, but I'm different. I want to be in the thick of it with the, with my clients. I want to be getting messy, and I want to untangle it all. And that's what people need to do. They need to find what they're so passionate, like in their heart. And sometimes you're just not going to see it, but you got to just keep trying to figure it out. And when you have this corporate mess trying to make you a pod and a sheep, you lose yourself. You lose your authenticity when you're there. Trust me. If you look at everybody in corporate, look around you, they're wearing khakis. They're wearing loafers. They're overweight. They're balding. On my snaps, I said, look, I found a sheep in the wilderness. And it's some fat guy walking across the street with his belly hanging over. And he's miserable. And I'm like, look, in the wild, the sheep of corporate America. And I'm trying to make everybody understand that everybody's got to look the same. Everybody's got to look right. Everybody's got to like worry about what everybody else is doing. And fuck that. I am who I am. I shouldn't have to change when I walk into a building. If I want to wear jeans, what's the fucking matter if I wear jeans with no holes in it or if I wear pink dress pants? I'm still going to do the same job. I'm still going to be there effectively. And what they're doing is they're trying to suppress people because that's what makes them stay. It makes them complacent. And I look around and I'm like looking at these amazing, smart people, but they're just beaten down. And I started being beaten down because this is the sixth or seventh year I've been in this type of industry. And I don't want to do it anymore because I started with the purpose of helping the military and helping, feeling like I have a purpose in this life, trying to help vets in the military because I'm so passionate about it. But I am so low on the totem pole. And all of this bureaucracy of management and just the dysfunction and the games and you call somebody out and it's like people are belittling and pushing people out. I just don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to play because when I play, I get shit done and it's messy. When they play, it's sneaky and conniving and it's just bad. And I don't want to do it anymore because it's not honest. And I'm tired of hearing, be honest, treat other people the way you want to be treated and all of this other stuff that's a mission, but then ethics and HR and your report. And at the end of the day, I don't care what anybody says, there's retaliation. They don't like using that word, but there is. Whether you push me into doing somebody else's job because you failed to do what you're supposed to do in management or consistently pushing me to try to see if you're going to break me because I reported you. And I'm sure you found out. It is just the games that I don't want to play anymore because, like I said, when I play, I call you out and it's done. There's no games. There's no head games. There's just, it's just done.
So for the woman standing there on the edge.
Fuck them. You need to take care of you. And yes, it's scary. I'm scared as shit. But in my heart and in my soul, I just don't belong there anymore. I have changed. I am not that person anymore that's just going to take care of everybody else and take the lumps. It's time for me to eat and everybody else will have to starve and figure it out.
Oh, I quit my job. Oh, wait. Ooh. I did. Ah.
Yeah.
I would have quit my fucking job right now.
So I'm sure I'm going to get fired after this, but hey, what the hell?
You know what? Somebody told me some good advice. Fuck them.
Yeah, it's true.
That's a fucking corporate rampage for your ass right there, people.
So I really enjoy being on here, Adam. Seriously, like, I wish we could have gotten to all the topics. And I'm sorry, listeners, that we could only take, you know, but I gave you so much that I've ever given, even stuff that I've never talked about, actually, you know, probably with Danny. That was the last time, which was during my retreat. So you guys kind of got a lot of stuff on me here. So, and I am just so happy with who I am right now. So I'm very happy to be able to share all of this with you. And there is, if you want change, you got to make the change. There's sacrifices you have to make, but you have to be willing to do it and stop blaming everybody else and get your head out of your ass.
Yeah, man. Whew. Shit. I love it when the guest shares like that. But thank you for sharing those moments of your life, the stories.
You're welcome.
In the internet world now, but I appreciate you coming on and being brave enough, facing stories you didn't even know were going to come up, and expressing those for everybody listening.
No, thank you so much, and I hope I can come on again, maybe with my own shirt.
I think we will.
So soulful, Adam. Amazing. I love it. Love the voice. No. Keep it up, man.
I have my moments. Thank you.
So thanks. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
All right. Bye.